Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and here we are back for the Wilson Weekly. You can see I'm in my best attire today, fresh from coming off the big stage event yesterday and the Christmas party. And as always, the amazing Dr. Wilson. And Doc, you were suited up for us the other night as well for the Infinity Christmas Ball.
Well, it was a black tie event, Graeme, so I've sort of dressed down a little bit as you have today.
Yeah.
But this is about the worst I get without a suit coat, but... No, it was a big event, and congratulations to you and the Infinity team on a marvellous night. We had, what, you had 700-800 people there, which was a huge event.
800.
The place was rocking. It was just incredible, and looking forward to next year's annual Christmas party.
I must say, Doc, there was two highlights of the night. Mick Collis, absolutely hilarious, the Sudoku captain.
Can you believe it?
Your entire presentation was 20 minutes
on the dot. I told you. I'd nail it. Yeah, a lot of pressure there, mate. A lot of pressure. Particularly given I couldn't see the slides because I couldn't read them.
Neither could I.
But who cares? But it was, I think the important thing was, who cares about the detail? It was done in 20 minutes, which was...
That's the win for 2023. You gave everyone the QR code. They can read it later. They're all too busy drinking anyway.
And that's right. Who cares, right? But they can celebrate later. And we'll, of course, be doing that in 2 weeks' time. Here's a lookout for everybody. Week after next, we will be doing the year that was 2023. And providing forecasts for 2024. So, good news. Watch out for that. But we've got a lot of data to cover. There's been a lot of data that's come out over the last 2 weeks, Graeme, and we'll be covering that this week and, of course, next week as well. The year's just about gone. We've got two weekends left for the auction market, this coming weekend and the weekend after. And then, of course, it is the big event of December, and that's Father Christmas. So
it is indeed.
Yeah, we can forget all about the damn property market for at least a week or two before we're back into it again. And, of course, the auction markets have a nice break. Well, the capital city auction markets have a nice break until the beginning of February, so that's sort of good. But we still have auction activity happening in some of the biggest seaside resorts. The Mornington Peninsula in Melbourne, quite active. And, of course, the Gold Coast is quite active over the January as well. So we might think about looking at some of those coastal regional results during the during January, Graeme. There might be some interest in that.
I've got a holiday property I'm auctioning in January on the Gold Coast. So there you go.
Ah, snap. Okay, excellent.
All the holiday makers are there thinking about, this is pretty nice. So I've got a renovated apartment going to auction at that in January, actually. So there you go.
There should be a lot of action there, a lot of buyer activity. Gold Coast is still a pretty hot market, Graeme. It's been a real rocket ship over the last 3 years. So I think that'll continue into January. And, I believe they're not going to run the Commonwealth Games. The Gold Coast were talking about doing the Commonwealth Games. They've bailed out. Between you and me, I think perhaps that's not a bad decision. Let's leave it all Southeast Queensland for the Olympics. No stress with that. There's a lot of work going on the Gold Coast at the moment, as you would know, Graeme, in preparation for, in preparation for the Olympics. But, as I said, they're not doing the Commonwealth Games now. I think they said it was because they didn't get any Commonwealth support in terms of funding. That was one of the main reasons. But at the end of the day, the Gold Coast has still got a head of steam about it, particularly the Gold Coast property market. And we'll have a look at that when we do our end of year, what's happened this year podcast in a couple of weekends. So we can start now, if you like, Graeme, and
Absolutely,
have a look at the,
Doc, I'm gonna,
the last
I'm keen
week
to see
that
the
was.
Data. Let's yes, rip last, in.
We're getting the end of year gremlins now happening, because
Absolutely.
Everybody's starting to feel a bit more laid back. We've had that Christmas parties going. We've had everybody's in you know, wind down mode, are we not?
And, well, you might start to see people instead of coffees, you might start to see a beer or a wine on their Zooms.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to my coffee when we finish here. So it's all good. And then I'm going to go down to the beach again. So just a heads up to that, just to keep the holiday spirit moving. So let's have a look at the data. Of course, the big news this week, Graham, was that the Reserve Bank decided to leave rates on hold. We had discussed, of course, that decision by the bank over November, Melbourne Cup decision. The bank decided to raise rates. Of course, that was the first increase in rates since June. And that followed five pauses since May this year. We've been a little bit critical of the Reserve Bank. You know, we thought, well, gee, guys, it doesn't look like there's much headway being made on reducing demand when they had it on pause, and that, gee, you know, you might have to come back here and raise rates. And sure enough, guess what happened? They had to come back and raise rates. Now, we also speculated that perhaps they may have to raise rates again in December, depending on the data. But you know, Graham, the latest data, and we'll have a look at that, some of it anyway, is actually supporting the fact that maybe they'll get lucky, the Reserve Bank. Maybe the times will suit them. And we are starting to see an improvement in the key factors that they're looking to in terms of reducing demand in the economy. Now, this is very early days. We are not saying anything. I still think the odds are in favour of another interest rate increase. But I do think that there was enough data coming through to support that the Reserve Bank could leave the rates on hold until their next meeting, which, of course, is in February when they can decide. There won't be a lot of data coming through until February, and that by February. And that, of course, was part of the what we discussed, that, you know, perhaps they'd go in December because there wouldn't be much to go on for the February meeting. But nonetheless, they've gone on hold. As I said, I think the data was a bit more positive for them. We'll look at that shortly. So that's good news for mortgage holders that we didn't go back-to-back with higher interest rates. You know, as we've seen, and we'll look at the rate story, rates are still pretty low, Graham, really, in terms of their relative position, not just in terms of our rate cycle, but the rate cycle of other similar advanced economies. So rates on hold over December. That followed that increase over November, which was the first one since June. The economy is still clearly strong despite those 13 rate rises since May 22. Jobless rate remains at near record lows. In fact, it's remarkable how consistently low that unemployment rate has been over the past 12 months or more. Jobs are surging. Yes, part of that is migration that's creating all these extra jobs. But nonetheless, jobs are surging. Unemployment was falling for a number of months there. It just picked up a little bit. Unemployment rose over the latest data, which was October, but still, you know, hasn't really risen to offset the falls that we had over the previous months. And that participation rate, which of course measures the proportion of the potential workforce that is actually working, is at a record high. So we've got a higher level of workers out of potential workers than we've ever had in our economy, Graham. So as I keep saying, this is one of the strongest labour markets, maybe arguably the strongest labour market we've ever had. Yeah. Retail sales are still high. We'll look at those, even though they eased a little bit in over October. We'll talk about that. They're well above the pre-COVID levels, despite, you know, more people obviously spending more through migration. And inflation, which of course is pushing up prices, so the value of resale sales is rising anyway because of the level of inflation in the economy. Inflation is lower, and we'll look at that latest inflation data shortly. But it's still too high, Graham. It's not starting, you know, celebrating, and we've won. You know, it's all great. We've got a long, long way to go, and that's why even though the latest data is perhaps supporting another wait and see stance from the Reserve Bank, you know, I would suggest, you know, we could still be certainly not sure about where we're heading in terms of having another interest rate increase.
I was going to say, Doc, what indicators, if we're sitting at home right now going, okay, oh, we can breathe until Feb, Chrissy, New Year. Yeah. What, in layman's speak, for mum and dad at home, what are the indicators we're thinking of for them to go, ooh, we're going up a quarter or we're going up a half and we've got to knock this on the head, or we'll hold again? What are the key things that mum and dad want to be listening out for or worried about?
The unemployment rate, Graham. I think that's the key. When you look back at when rates were increased to quell demand through higher inflation, as reflected in higher inflation, it was when the unemployment rate started to rise that, you know, that was the sign that demand was quite. Of course, when you lose your job, you're going to start thinking about what you're spending on, right? And even though our unemployment rate, when it rises, we'll still have well over 90% of people in work. Probably well over, 95% you know, people in work, it still has an impact on the mindset of those when they do start, of you know, those that still got a job, on the mindset of those that are in work in terms of their spending patterns, you know. So that's what we've got to look for. The month-to-month inflation data is really a snapshot. They do look at the quarterly data in more depth, the RBA. But, you know, the point is we're now getting this monthly data set, and I think they do look at that. They do look at that in making their decisions. But I think the unemployment rate, Graham, and the other bits and pieces, you know, that are coming through, such as retail sales, are important. That shows what we're spending on. But I do think that the key indicator that we need to start to see is the actual seasonally adjusted monthly unemployment rate would have to start to rise. And I think that you know, once it gets towards 4%, that would be the end of the rate rising environment, certainly over 4%. But there are other factors that have to be taken into consideration. And but I do think that's that key driver is look at the unemployment. Because if you go back in time when we have raised rates, victory was sort of signaled by a higher unemployment, which isn't good news, Graham. But this is about the hangover after the party that we've had through COVID spending, you know, which we had to have. It's just the unfortunate result of the stimulus package. And as the big question is always, has the RBA taken its foot off the brake a little bit too soon? Well, we knew that earlier in the year because it had to raise rates again. Now, you know, we'll only know over the coming months whether they're going to have to raise rates again. So when we look at the actual cycle for interest rates, there we go, up and up and up, steady, middle of the year, up again. We're still below where we were at the previous rate increasing cycle back in 2000, the peak of that cycle in 2011-12. So in relative terms, you know, we're still below that previous peak cycle. But I think what's important is, I'll just get back to that. We haven't got that there, is when we compare it to the US, Graham. We're still, in terms of our inflation rate, we're well over 1% higher with our, we'll look at this with the inflation data shortly, over 1% higher with our underlying inflation rate, and yet our official rate, interest rate, is 1% lower. So we've got a lower interest rate but higher inflation than the US. So I'm not saying we should be exactly the same as the US, but it's a little bit out of sync, if you understand what I mean, as a benchmark, way to compare.
But if the US sneezes, don't we catch a cold, Doc?
Yeah, look, a little bit like that, and that's the point. It's about sentiment. But the actual drivers are different. But I think that, you know, we've proven to be behind the eight ball when compared to the US because we had to raise rates back in November, if you understand what I mean. So that was sort of catching up with the US issue, and the Reserve Bank mentioned that, so they were sort of alert to that disparity that was happening. So let's have a look. We'll look at inflation later, but before we do that, let's have a look at the latest rent report, Graham, which, of course, is very important. So hot off the press, this is the My Housing Market November rent report for all the capital cities. We saw rents rise again. I guess we're used to that, seeing rents rise for houses and units. But what was interesting, Graham, is we just started to see vacancy rates easing. Now, nobody's saying they're going to get higher anytime soon, but just some early signs that vacancy rates were starting to ease. Now, this may be just a sign that, you know, this terribly tight rental market, the rental crisis, as many has alluded to, is now affecting demand, and people are starting to put off leaving home. People are, you know, joining together in multifamily units, you know, selecting different property types because they just can't afford to live where they want to live. These types of scenarios, which we've discussed, may be impacting demand, for rental properties and just easing vacancy rates slightly. Now, as I said, they're still horrifically low, Graham, but just some early signs there that they're easing. And this has nothing to do with supply in the sense of, you know, a lot of new supply coming through, although we have seen, and we'll look at the home loan data next week, some increased activity from investors. Okay. So that means perhaps some more investor property. So some good news there at the margin. The bad news is rents are higher, of course.
Yeah.
But maybe the outlook is terribly tough to be a tenant, but the outlook is a little bit better. So capital city home rental markets continue to report higher rents generally over November. Some signs of early signs anyway of an easing in what nonetheless remain record low vacancy rates in most markets. So this is the data here, Graham. Sydney still tops in terms of rents.
We've jumped about 3%. $23.
Wow. Yeah, up 3%, a big jump over the month, but it sort of eases, then jumps, eases, it jumps. You know, Sydney, very strong demand there. Melbourne was flat over the month. Brisbane, after some very strong months of growth, just eased a little bit, down 4.4%. Adelaide and Perth, however, they were higher. But when we look at the annual results, very strong annual results, well over double figures everywhere in the major capitals, with the exception of Brisbane, which, of course, had that fall over the month. So that's taken away the annual increase, or makes it lower than the other major capitals. But nonetheless, that's a real hefty rise over 12 months, Graham, for your rent, pushing up, you know, over 10%, close to 20% in most of those major capitals. Now, even though the vacancy rates just did ease slightly, they're still very low. You know, they're up a little bit compared to the previous month, but the vacancy rates are still under 1% everywhere, Graham, except for Canberra, which is on 1%. So they are shockingly low vacancy rates. When the equilibrium market is around about 2 to 2.5% vacancy rate, anything under 2% is typically seeing higher rents, and that's what we're seeing now. And as I said, I think that those higher vacancy rates are about people just abandoning or giving up in the short term about, you know, being in the rental market, you know. And this is what's going to happen, you know, because rents are so high and there's no relief coming through in terms of real relief if more properties being available. So units, Sydney units were down with houses up, down 2.7%. Melbourne units flat. Brisbane rents, and Brisbane's been a real big, a star performer for that rental market in terms of the landlord's outlook or the landlord's perspective. Brisbane rents up 4.2% and now $625 median asking rent for a unit in Brisbane. Adelaide up 1% and Perth and Hobart really up strongly over the month, 5%. But, of course, they are small markets, those markets for units, and that tends to be quite volatile. But look at those annual results, still very, very high, over 20% in all the major capitals with the exception of Adelaide. In terms of annual growth, big numbers there for unit growth. And interestingly, Brisbane is now the top performer, Graham, for annual. We mentioned that it has been a star in terms of rental growth from the landlord's perspective, up by 23.8% over the past year. And it's interesting because the Melbourne and Sydney market suffered through COVID, so they've come from a low base, but Brisbane really didn't have that same low base starting point. It's just been a very strong market. A lot of it, of course, through that surge in demand, through that exodus out of the southern states during COVID lockdown. But big results there. Vacancy rates are higher in units, which is typically what we see anyway compared to houses. And they also were on the upward move. But still, you know, we're talking just above 1% in the larger markets there. Brisbane 1.1, Melbourne 1.8. And Sydney 1.2%. As I said, 2% is basically the benchmark for a balanced rental market. Anything above that 2%, we start to see rents easing. Anything below that, we start to see rents rising. So it's still very much a market in favour of the landlord. So that's the latest rental market data, Graham. Interesting trends there. We'll keep our eye on that. Of course, over the holiday period, we do have less demand because we don't have the shift in dwelling interest because of the people are on holidays. They're putting it off till the beginning of the year until they're back at work or back at school. So we'll tend to see higher vacancy rates through that period, but that's a seasonal impact. But we'll watch out for that when we do the December and January rent reports. So we also had the latest monthly inflation data out, Graham. I mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. Inflation was actually down, and this, of course, is what's helped the Reserve Bank put rates on hold. We saw headline inflation down from 5.6 to 4.9% over the month. That followed that rise from 5.2 to 5.6%. So we had 2 months of rises. That led to the Reserve Bank increasing rates. We had quite a significant shift downwards over October. I think that helped the Reserve Bank decide to go onto hold mode over December. They have to pay some attention to these monthly numbers, even though they are not complete, really, as complete as the quarterly numbers. But nonetheless, I think that helped the Reserve Bank make its decision in terms of leaving rates on hold with headline inflation down to 4.9%. Underlying inflation was also down. That excludes the volatile elements. Was down to 5.3%. But we've got to remember, Graham, that the target's 2 to 3%, and we're still at 5.3%. So we got a long way, I'm sorry, to go before we get to the target for the Reserve Bank. And as I said, that probably mean, unless things really go right for it, and things were looking a little better over the past month, more interest rate increases. Again, housing with food and transport were the key contributors to higher inflation. Housing, of course, particularly means rents and particularly means house building costs. They are up 6.1%, but that was lower than the previous month, September. Food was up 5.3%. That also was lower than the previous month. And fuel costs, which is transport, was up 5.9%. And that was particularly lower than what was recorded over September in terms of the growth rate. And that's why we did see inflation fall, Graham, because housing costs were down, and I particularly mean house building costs, and we're going to have a look at that that data, house building cost data, which is improving, thankfully, particularly for our undersupplied housing market. That'll help builders. But fuel costs, as we know when we look at the Bowser, Graham, out there, that fuel costs are now, they're like $2.50 petrol a litre. A month or so ago, and that was when the Reserve Bank was pushed up rates. But now they're down under $2 a litre in most capitals, and that's because the price of oil has fallen. So that was higher. Yes, these are still high numbers. Prices are still rising at 4.9% a year, but certainly well down from that 5.6%, and that's because of those improvements, particularly in housing costs and transport costs. Underlying inflation, however, is still well ahead of the target range. So there's the inflation cycle, Graham. You can see how huge it is this year or since inflation started to rise. See that great big lump? And see where we've got to get back to. Mm-hmm. We've got to get back to where we were pre-COVID. That's a long, long way to go. And there's the data which I mentioned about comparing us with the US. US inflation, this is underlying inflation, it's 4%. We're 5.3, and yet the US interest rate is 5.5%, and we're only 4.35%.
I was going to say, Doc, is there an argument? A client asked me this the other day. Is there an argument to just go whack 0.5%, or are interest rates really just not that effective in managing inflation anymore?
Well, if you went 0.5%, they'd be effective, Graham, because that would really put the cat amongst the pigeons. That's and that's the point. But I think Reserve banks, central banks are very, very wary about slamming the brakes on and creating a significant economic downturn. Now, they've got a very fine balancing act. If inflation becomes entrenched, they're all going to get accused of not having the will to go hard enough to get rid of inflation, and therefore inflation is going to be around for a long time. So they've got a lot of jeopardy involved here. They don't go hard enough. The US has gone harder than Australia, and its inflation rate is lower, and it's obviously had a better output. We can't compare like with like, but because they're not like with like, but nonetheless, there is a disparity there, Graham, when you look at those comparisons. And the point is, the Reserve Bank has been telling us that they're going to get back to the target 2 to 3% by the end of 2025. Now they're saying, you know, that's why they raise rates. They're not that sure it's going to be the end of 2025. Mate, that's like we're talking 4 years nearly of high inflation, you know. And I mean, that's a long time to, you know, and it's a very, you know, a lot of things can happen, can come out of left field to upset the inflation apple cart, you know.
You look at this graph on screen, you look at the up, how quick and sharp it is.
Yeah.
And then you look at the gradual, just hit it on the head.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what, you know, sometimes you need to take your medicine, mate. You know, this is the point. And it's unpleasant. But if you're going to get cured, you have to take your medicine. And you can see the problem is that the last couple of percent of getting down to the target are the hardest.
And that's where you've got to really – it's almost like the kid that hates that cough syrup that tastes disgusting. And the inflation's like that little kid running away from the cough medicine because they don't like the taste. They're going to have to catch it eventually.
That's right. And, you know, this is what's going to happen. And they can't keep saying, oh, well, it'll be another year before we get back to the target, because people will then start to put in their expectations of inflation at a higher level. And that's very hard to stop, because then everybody just expects inflation to rise 4 or 5% a year. You know, and then that becomes entrenched. Underlying inflation becomes entrenched. But we have seen some improvement. As I said, let's not get too pessimistic here. We have seen some improvement, but Graham, there is a long, long, long way to go. Let's not get ourselves here. And we are behind, particularly the results of the US at the moment. Retail sales, they were down. So, again, this is probably the Reserve Bank could say to themselves, oh, well, we said that. That's an important indicator that retail spending was down. It actually fell 0.2% over the month, but it's still up 1.2% compared to October last year. And that followed a strong rise, 0.9% over September, which was actually the strongest rise since January. But, Graham, there is a disclaimer here for that lower result. November sales, mate, Black Friday. People, of course, were thinking, hey, I'm not buying anything in October. I'm waiting for those Black Friday sales, which is now a global event. And it was interesting that in the US they've been talking down, you know, because the US, you know, financial commentators are even worse than our financial commentators, you know. They say everything just to get a margin, just to get people betting one way or the other, I think, you know, my opinion. But anyway, they are all saying, oh, November's going to be a terrible month for sales. It's not going to have the usual burst of because of higher interest rates, yada, yada, yada. Guess what, Graham? It's been a bumper year, a bumper month, November, for retail sales in the US. Big numbers have come out in the preliminary results. So their November sales have just rocked on very strongly as usual. So we need to wait for the results for the retail sales for November. But if the US's performance is any indication, they'll be quite strong, because November is now the big month of the year for retail sales, and because people do their Christmas shopping as well during November. So it used to be December because of all the Christmas shopping. Now it's November because it's not only got the sales, it's also taking a lot of that Christmas spending, you know, because people perceive that it's cheaper to buy in November for their Christmas sales. So, but nonetheless, you know, when we look at the data, you can still see, you know, we had this massive increase in retail sales from the mid to high 20s to the mid to high 30s, which is a massive increase through COVID. That was all the money we printed being spent. We're still tracking at the same levels as a year ago, so we haven't really lost any of that energy. Yes, I know that we've had lots more people in Australia spending, so that's one reason it's still high. And yes, we have inflation, because this is the value of retail sales. So that's another reason it's high. But at the end of the day, it's 40% higher, Graham, than what it was pre-COVID. And retail sales generally only increase marginally year on year. So that 40% increase is not about higher inflation or higher migration. Even with that, it still shows that we are spending strongly, you know, and I think that will be validated when we get the November sales results going forward. So I wouldn't take this in any way as being a positive sign that higher interest rates are working. And that's the whole point here, Graham. And what I was going to mention about the unemployment rate, it's still very low at 3.7%. But the Reserve Bank is saying, which I can't, you know, fathom, quite honest, in terms of the strength of what they're saying, is that the there are signs that the labour market is weakening. But they're using like hours worked and the unemployment rate for particular groups, you know, and at the margin they're trying to say that there's some improvement. It's almost as though they're selecting, you know, measures of the labour market to suit their argument, if you know what I mean, rather than just stick with the bloody unemployment rate, boys and girls, and use that as your key sign. And the unemployment rate remains at that amazingly low level, 3.7%. So let's finish off with the auction market as usual, Graham. Of course, we know that the end of the year signals lower clearance rates because we have more listings, Graham, and various other bits and pieces. We've discussed this. We've seen that over the past few weekends. Clearance rates have been easing, but we've also seen some very big numbers of auctions coming into the market. Last weekend was a bit of a surprise because even though we had another big weekend in auctions, Graham, clearance rates were actually steady. In fact, they were up a little bit in Sydney and Melbourne, despite big numbers. So there's still plenty of energy in the market. And when we look at that, we will look at that next week. We'll look at the number of actual sales that are occurring. Our sales numbers are very high, even though our clearance rates are lower. So we're actually selling higher levels of properties compared to when we had 80% clearance rates back in autumn and into winter, Graham. So they were steady overall. We mentioned there in our review of last weekend's results that, as we already know, that rates were on hold, and the prospects were that they would be on hold following an improvement in that inflation rate. And we knew that's the outcome. Not that that would have really influenced the market last weekend because they didn't know what the result would be. But as you can see, another big weekend of numbers, Graham, 859 auctions in Sydney.
It's huge.
Clearance rate was, again, they've had huge numbers of auctions in Sydney this year and still held up. Plenty of appetite for property in Sydney. 69.6% clearance rate was higher than the weekend before, Graham, despite that sort of, it's December, goodness sake, and we're still getting lots of properties clearing the market. Melbourne, another over 1,000 auctions in Melbourne, more than the weekend before. And Melbourne also had a higher clearance rate, Graham, 65.2%. So lots of properties sold under the hammer. Brisbane, which we know is a little bit sideways in terms of its auction culture, but still a good result there in a relative sense for what we expect from Brisbane, from, again, nearly 100 auctions in Brisbane. Adelaide's just weakened a little bit, which I think is interesting, Graham, after a super past year, the Adelaide auction market. We just were like, oh, ho-hum, another 80% clearance rate for Adelaide.
Week in, week out. Adelaide was rattling.
That's right. It was crazy. Now a little bit more. Big number, 133 auctions, Graham, in Adelaide. Big numbers and still a 70% clearance rate, which was the highest of any of the capitals, but still nonetheless not where what we're used to in Adelaide. And Canberra, a little bit better over the weekend, but the Canberra market has been a bit of a slider this year and hasn't really performed as strongly as the other capitals. So this is our trends, just easing towards the mid-year following what was certainly a boom through the autumn and winter period in Melbourne and Sydney. Same for Melbourne, easing, but just holding on to its market, which is a good sign for next year, I think, for Melbourne. Going forward, and as we always discuss, Graham, we both of us believe Melbourne's got some good value opportunities. Yeah. Didn't really get the results this year, Melbourne, that the other capitals did, but I still think that's a market that's waiting to grow. Brisbane steady again, as we mentioned, but it had a very strong mid part of the market, which is when it's those sort of levels in Brisbane, you really know something's happening. And we saw that through that migration period, particularly in Brisbane, where those auction clearance rates start to look like Sydney auction clearance rates. But more of a normalised market now in Brisbane, but we know prices are still rising in Brisbane. So still a strong market. Adelaide, as we can see, really fallen away over the last couple of months. Not that you'd be worried if you're a seller in Adelaide. It's just not 80% anymore. It's 70%. And Canberra has been that much softer market over the back end of the year, particularly compared to Sydney, but probably some opportunities in that Canberra market as well in terms of catching up, particularly compared to the Sydney market. So you get those auction clearance rates, Graham. As we say, every Saturday night around 6:30, we have the main results auction clearance rates for the Capitals, and Sunday mornings we have the national auction report, which covers the regional breakdowns for Melbourne and Sydney. So look out for those on my LinkedIn account. And as we always finish off with our app, the Infinity My Housing Market app, what's my house, how much is my home currently worth? Well, here's a good way of finding out what the market's currently asking for properties. You can get a copy of that with that QR code. You can get a copy of the app, but you have to go through Infinity. There are a few hoops to jump through, of course, to get access to it, but it's a great little app. You can look at any suburb in Australia that has data. It will tell you what the current asking price, asking rent is, also the median price, high price, low price, median rent, high price, low rent for each suburb, and the number of listings, the number of properties for sale, and the number of properties for rent in every suburb in Australia that has data. And you can also filter it for the type of property. So you can filter it for a house or a unit or a townhouse. You can filter it for the number of bedrooms, one bedroom, two bedroom, et cetera. So it's a very positive little app, comprehensive, and it's updated daily. So you know exactly what's happening in the market, what people are asking for their properties. Quite comprehensive. And there's just a little snapshot of the app that's looking, of course, at, and of course, I did mention you can mention the bedrooms. We're all in holiday mode here, mate. It's terrible, isn't it? So there's just what you can do. And that's using Blacktown houses as an example there. And you can see that's revealed what the median price is for a five bedroom house in Blacktown. For sale, and that's the current data. So you can do that for every suburb in Australia for either rents or prices. So that's it for this week. Another big week in property, Graham. We've got 2 weeks left. More data next week. We're going to have a look at what I think some very interesting news on house building costs, which are now starting still high. Let's not get carried away.
Yeah.
But the trend is certainly improving. We also had an uptick in building approvals. Also, we're seeing loans for investors increasing. So some better news there for more investor stock, but not so good news for first home buyers with the latest home loan data that's shifted downwards. So lots to discuss next week. So we look forward to that, Graham. Yes, if we can
look forward to it, and we'll let you get back to
off the beach.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll let you get back to the sun, surf, and sand, Doc. You have a great day.
Yes, Graham, and looking forward to, of course, another big event on Sunday with the Infinity crew.
Absolutely.
And back again in Sydney. So, the market's still chugging along quite nicely. It's going to be a big year. Look forward to our year in review in 2 weeks' time. So I will catch you all next week, and look forward to the latest data. And look after yourself, Graham. It's holiday season.
don't get too sunburnt, mate. I'll be worried about you.
No, I'm good, mate. I always put the hat on, you know.
That's it. Thanks, Doc. Take care.
Thanks, Ryan.